you, Dick. So, good morning, everybody. So my name is Ben Henschel. I'm coming from Audel ETH Aachen University. And today I'm going to talk about, how to visualize block damage inside of ventricular assist devices. So, that's supposed to be the next slide. Come on. I don't think so. I think it just moved to... here we go. All right, so first the overview. Oh, boy. So this doesn't exactly help to get me started, right? Sorry for that. Okay, so here we go. Overview. First, I'm going to talk about what blood damage is in general and, why it's interesting to just look at it. Then I'm going to have a technical section about what visualization techniques we actually came up with to visualize blood damage before talking about the results which we eventually found out using these techniques. Finally, there'll be a short wrap-up. So, as we heard already, heart disease is a quite common problem which affects a great many people. Unfortunately, many people who would actually benefit from heart transplantation cannot really find a suitable transplant in time. So VADs, or ventricular assist devices, artificial blood pumps, are used in this context to bridge or even extend the waiting times which these patients have. The long-term goal underlying the research that the domain scientists which are involved in this project have is that they want to use VADs as a really long-term solution, so making it an option instead of heart transplantation. The problem which we have right now is the problem of hemolysis, which stands between us and this goal. Okay, I mean, traditionally, optimizing VADs has been quite a tricky task. Because you had to heavily rely on experiments, like you can see on the lower left side here. And the basic problem, aside from these high cost and error prowess of experiments, which you usually have, is that you only have an ex-ante-ex-post comparison of the blood which flows through this VAD. So you can't tell, how good it is actually as a whole device, but you can't tell where actually in this device blood damage does occur. So instead of... using these experiments, the domain scientists want to set up a virtual prototyping process using a CFD and automatic shape optimization in order to optimize this process with computational power. So from here on out, I'm be quite out of topic because I'm going on flow visualization right now and not too much medical here. Blood damage actually occurs as a result of shearing in the flow. So basically, a red blood cell will have two countermeasures to counteract this. First, there will be a deformation into a rotating ellipsoid from the usual biconcave shape, which you can see in the images down there. And then there will kick in something which is called a tank treading motion. So here, the outer cell or the cell boundary, cell membrane, will start rotating about the cell's inner core. Before finally hemolysis occurs. The blood damage model, which analyzed this work, models this by going from an initially spherical droplet to a deformed ellipsoid. And according to this deformation, we can basically tell for every trace point on a path line what the blood damage basically is at that point. Key variables derived from that process are the rate of hemolysis at any given trace point and the hemolysis per path line, although I will concentrate on the local rate of hemolysis for the rest of this talk. When we had initial discussions about what to do here, the users, they were kind of stuck in a situation where they had this very fine model and wanted to make sense of it, but could only do quite largely quantitative analysis and do simple path line plots like you see down here. On the other hand, our group had been doing this kind of virtuality stuff. I will show a brief video to just give you an impression. Yes, it works. just basically having two major advantages. First of all, their 3D perception of these path lines, which you can see quite nicely in the video, I guess. And secondly, the direct interaction, direct navigation type of thing, which you usually only have within immersive environments. So at this point, I have to be honest, we were not able to come up with the interactive particle tracing as you see it here for the kind of data sizes the users provided us. Nonetheless, there were quite some good effects of using VR for navigation and spatial relation tasks. Okay, the initial discussions eventually boiled down to these requirements. So just show the temporal evolution of deformation along a path line, just show what the blood damage model actually yields. Then show an overview, so give something which might help you to find out where actually interesting things happen. Since we were interested in the causes of blood damage, we wanted to see correlations to other flow variables. And well, finally, after some initial demos, the users were eager, although they did not ask for it in the first place, they were eager to give this virtuality stuff a try. So in case you are just struggling to see the images, I'll come back to them later in the talk. All right, that makes up for the technical section right now. Easy things first. Now, we had this model, which basically, this deformation or deformed sphere dropped out of it, and so we directly visualized this one. Since the users were pretty much interested in the rotation, so especially for this tank treading motion, we had to add some information to just the solid shape, which you see on the far left side, and we came up with this semi-transparent design where you show the local axis, which relate to the eigenvectors of the morphology tensor. And since you wanted to match rotations during the animation, we came up with this design where you would color code them for easy matching. In this case, I should note that we don't have any problems with extreme cases like planar or cylindrical, because this catastrophic hemolysis, so the final rupture of the cell's membrane, will occur eventually far before these cases are in place. So basically, the entire visualization now relies on animating these icons along path lines. The next problem that evolved when we showed early prototypes was that we had quite a long simulation in terms of time steps. So the case study I'm talking here, it has more than 5,000 time steps. It was quite hard to memorize what effects you would have at the very beginning of the animation without having some kind of overview. So basically, you would have forgotten about interesting effects at the beginning once the animation was through. So we used this overview by removing any moving parts of the geometry, as you see down here, so you don't have the rotating impeller in here anymore. Just show a static path line display and place example icons, in this case measured according to Euclidean distance, along this path line, and just give an overview what happens so the user can make up his mind and see, well, actually here something interesting is happening. Now, this not only lends itself for an overview, but also, as you can see on the right-hand side, and is this small video popping up in a second, you can see it also lends itself to direct interaction. So within the virtual environment, you would be able to pick any one of these icons and then start the animation once again. So you see the moving geometries then shown again, and just see what happens downstream of this point which you initially picked. Okay. The next point is, where does actually high hemolysis occur? Now, this is an interesting one, because we were given the data only on path lines. So we had no volumetric representation which was suitable to like standard scalar field displays, for example, direct volume rendering or isosurfacing, or in case of traditional engineers, 2D cut planes. And we had to come up with something that we would eventually manage to see these regions where actually hemolysis occurs. And we did quite a straightforward mapping here, in that we just inserted small marker particles into the flow, not advecting them, but having them just in place. And by the distribution of these marker particles, we would eventually see where these high hemolysis regions were. So this works basically as follows. First, we align a set of marker templates. So you see these concentric circles here along the path line. So these are aligned perpendicular to each chase point. Then we would come up with a number of particles which need to be seeded depending on the local rate of hemolysis, delta H here. And we would eventually fill the template from the inside out so that not only the number of particles is based on the rate of hemolysis, but also the radius. When you exaggerate this effect, you end up with something like this. So here you can basically see that the distribution not only varies, distribution varies with the rate of hemolysis, but also the radius, as I just told you. In order to counteract any formation of usual patterns, we randomize the placement or the rotation of the templates. All right. Then, as a next step, or as a final visualization step, basically, our users wanted to see some quantitative data. So the idea here being to plot a scalar value for a particle population. We did this by going for a density-based approach, so starting with an image down here, where you have a reference axis over which you would plot the data, so some scalar quantity. The example which I'll do here is plotting the velocity magnitude over the z direction, which is, in this case, the major direction of flow. This works as follows. For every path line, you would look up the values for reference axis and scalar quantity, map it to the image, count the number of occurrences per pixel, do this for all path lines, for all trace points, and then end up here in two different resolutions with a density image like this. So here you can basically see how the flow or how the particles are speed up once they enter the impeller in this device and once they decelerate when they exit it due to conservation laws. Okay, so that's it for the technical section. Now I'm going to show some results. First, let me introduce you to the device which you have seen earlier in the talk. So this basically consists of four major parts. There's this outer casing of this device, then a flow straightener, the impeller, which rotates quite fast. So for the case study, it was set to 7,500 RPM, and the diffuser. The grid is, kind of tough because it's a moving tetrahedral grid with 200 time steps per revolution. We needed like 26 revolutions to chase in order to get the particles through the device, and this amounted to a total particle population of roughly 8.8 million points. Okay, so now the initial hypothesis where high hemolysis might occur was that it would be during the acceleration phase early in the impeller. However, as you can see from this video, this is entirely not the case. So basically, the droplets just pass the impeller, and there's no such thing as any deformation occurring. However, astonishingly, leaving the impeller again, there's heavy deformation going on, as you can see from these marker particles there, there's also a high rate of local hemolysis going on here. Obvious question being, why is that? So we looked at the particle chases. On the left-hand side, you can see small tracelets giving temporal context, and you see these small clues in here, in these columns in the diffuser, which look like recirculation. When we look at this video of instantaneous particle positions, you can in fact see here, when you watch these little guys here, that they eventually will exit the diffuser again and take some more turns around the impeller. So there is recirculation going on here, and it's not supposed to happen at this point. So we were one step further and asked ourselves, well, does this backflow actually have to do something with blood damage? Then we went for the density plots, and in fact, negative z velocity, so z velocity being the major direction of flow, negative z velocity showed up in just this space where this high rate of hemolysis could be observed. And another thing we watched, we took a look at was the local shear rate, which had a direct impact into the formulas of the underlying blood damage model. And here you can see as well that in these very regions there's quite a high amount of shearing going on. However, we were not able to conclusively link this directly from a spatial point of view, because when we looked at these spatial displays. Here we shown backflow regions with red volume rendering and highlighted high shear rate on this cut plane, which you can see there in blue. We could not directly link the regions of high hemolysis to these regions. One reason for this might be that the blood damage model underlying this work does not only account for the local sharing, but also takes into account the exposure time. So there might as well be some lag between the actual shearing effect and the deformation and the effect it has on the blood damage model itself. So I'm basically done with this. Let's wrap it up. Looking back, there's basically two perspectives on this. So first, from the domain scientist's point of view, well, it was kind of a help for them because first they were stuck with the situation where they could not get the most out of their data with what they perceived to be standard visualization techniques. So when we then did these techniques, they basically got some insights. This unexpected behavior in the impeller diffusion transition being the most interesting one of them. And, well, we are still looking into this, why we could not directly link this to some other flow variables there. What might be even more interesting, like in this setting, is from the visualization researcher's point of view, I have to admit this has not quite been an all-out research project in this regard from the start on. But why has this been successful anyway? Because we came up with some methods which are now really used by the domain scientists, and why is that? So the first point here is that there were specific questions towards the data. So this basically helped to really guide the overall design process. So we knew right from the start on out where we would like to go. Then there were these initial discussions which led to the requirements which I stated earlier. And, these helped to really then guide the operational design of the visualization techniques. I have to admit at this point that these requirements were not established in the very first place before just doing anything, but were part to or subject to evolution as well. So whenever we would come up with something or some new techniques, we would show early prototypes to our collaborators. They would comment on it and eventually come up with something new or some new requirements. So this was part of this very close collaboration which was going on there. It worked the other way around as well. So whenever we would have questions towards the hemologic background or fluid mechanical background, there would be somebody to tell us. Well, actually, VR was perceived, at least by the users who we talked to be actually beneficial, mostly for spatial referencing tasks, like, for example, where do these particles actually go? How close do they pass to some geometry? Where does hemolysis occur? How close is it going to be to some high shearing rate region? And finally, well, I'd like to conclude this talk by making a quite... Yeah, I know it's kind of controversial statement. There might be a reason for the success of this is that we visualized the data and left the whole interpretation to the domain scientists. So visualizing meaning that we concurred to quite a close link between the actual data and the images that dropped out of it. And so the domain scientists could well have this very link established very easily. So I wouldn't argue that there is no reason or no point in doing automatic feature detection and all this stuff, but it's only that much harder to sell it to these people because once they get this like black box approach, they tend to be very, very critical towards this. So with this, I'd like to close, and I'd be glad to take questions. Thank you.
And we do have time for questions. So then I'll start. So if you compare this device with a regular heart, so some of the features you find also on that, you have some backflow at the valves, you have some stress, especially at the valves when the heart's pumping out of the left ventricle. But the material is quite different. Do you think that the assume hard metallic or is it what kind of polymer or what kind of material is it?
It is metal, actually.
So does that contribute to the damage?
Well, I'm actually not quite the right guy to ask this because
if you want to know, we have.
Yeah, sure. I wanted to bring one with me, but he wouldn't be allowed to. No, I really don't know, actually. That's the honest answer.
Any other question? So I see some flow with people here, so they could have questions.
I'm the one who's standing between them and their breakfast.
In that case, then, we let you to your breakfast, and thank you for your attention, and let's thank our all speakers again.